Hello, Curious K Podcast listeners. It's your favorite host, Colapo, back with another amazing episode to satisfy your curiosity. And today, we are having a great conversation with a visionary entrepreneur, Sam Badou. You know, the first time I saw the name, I thought it was Badou, you know, as a typical Nigeria, right? But this is my brother from Ghana. And Sam is a mastermind behind Flurry, which is a family care platform with initial focus on the African continent diaspora. And throughout this episode, we explore Sam's inspiring journey as an entrepreneur, from navigating the complexities, you know, of building value for African diaspora, you know, and embracing technology, you know, innovations. And moreover, we unravel the stories of the transformation brought about by Flurry Presence, you know, and we'll shine the spotlight on some of the platform's tangible impact on African communities and other communities globally, you know, as they evolve. So get ready, sit down, ready to be inspired and informed, you know, as we evolve on this enlightening conversation. So without much ado, it's an honor, Sam, to have you. Welcome to Curious K Podcast.
Colapo, it is a pleasure to be here with you. It's a pleasure to always have a conversation with you, and I'm looking forward to being able to document and dive a little bit into the work that we're doing here at Flurry, and maybe a little bit more into what I've been involved in leading up to this.
Absolutely. Thank you once again, Sam, for taking out the time to join us. We're looking forward to a very exciting conversation. So let's start from here, Sam. How did the idea of Flurry originate? You know, what actually inspired you, you know, to create a family care platform?
So I would say that, you know, there's nothing that actually inspired me to create a family care platform. There's nothing that I didn't wake up one day to say I want to create a family care platform. Instead, life and its circumstances lead towards an expectation. I didn't wake up one day and say I wanted to set up a family care platform, a family care solution, right? I had the unfortunate experience of, you know, watching my grandmother get sick, and not really even watching her because I lived here. I couldn't go back home. But this woman that I'd grown up with had gotten sick, and all we did was just send money back home, right? She ended up passing away because we couldn't coordinate the care that she needed and make sure that she had access to the best care or the right care. She ended up going to see a traditional healer and taking some a mixture that we can't verify, and the contributed part of it, right? But then also just the sheer quality of care that she had, simply because, you know, we weren't there, or simply because we couldn't find a way to get all of that organized, you know, led to her demise. And for me, that was a wake-up call that, hey, simply because you can afford to send money back home doesn't mean that you're actually making a difference. And so my goal became, is there a way to better do this, right? To start researching and understanding how many people actually have problems, right? Mm. Finding and providing the right care to the people they love back home. And I realized that it was a huge number of people. In fact, 83% of immigrants, right, acknowledge sending money, right, for a healthcare emergency or a healthcare need. And so for us, it became, can we help them provide this care that they want to provide in a much more efficient, transparent, and accountable way? And to help them do it without putting themselves in financial jeopardy as a result of that. So that's where Flurry started from.
Thank you, Sam, for sharing that. That's a emotional story. My condolences on about your grandmother. But I mean, it's very important to understand like how powerful, it is, when you actually have conversations, with the right people or connect with other people in the diaspora, for example, like you mentioned, like 83%, that have this kind of issue, and was it how did you validate that number? Did you like have conversations with other people? I understand the importance of like the personal experience you had. So what else? What other process did you use to just validate that need, before
So
launching out the platform?
I really appreciate that question because I think it's important to emphasize that simply because you experience something doesn't make it a trend, neither does it make it a problem that other people experience, right? So a number of ways, and I'll highlight them, right? The very first thing that I did was to approach my situation with a healthy amount of skepticism, right? And so I reached out to about 400 people on my LinkedIn, right? Simply sending messages, asking them a series of questions to be able to get some initial feedback. Out of that 400, maybe 120 people responded back to me. Out of the 120, I actually booked close to 100 meetings over a 3 month period to be able to deep dive into these people. And the primary reason was to understand, who was taking care of their loved ones back home? How were they doing it? How much were they spending? Where was that money going to? And to be able to build that. But also, there's a ton of data that is produced on migrants, right, by a number of institutions, right? So there's the New American Institute in the US. There is NOMAD, KNOMAD, that does a lot of research on the diaspora. There's also the World Bank, that publishes a lot of research from different fields, right? All tackling issues of remittances, migration. And so from there, it became evident that there were a number of things that we were dealing with. We were dealing with one, the volume of remittances that are actually sent, the tracked variables or the tracked percentages for where those remittances are going to, the percentage of disposable income that is committed towards remittances, and basically how the impact on the quality of life actually looks like when that process has been examined. And so we started looking at that from both that qualitative and quantitative data standpoint to be able to build an initial thesis that we could test, which was if we built a solution that allowed people in the diaspora, starting with one single diaspora, the Ghanaian diaspora, right, allowed them to be able to make a payment, right, make a payment for X number of variables, right, for, healthcare, for education, how would that test out? And then how would people react to that? So that's essentially the way that we went about it. I know it's a long response to a very short answer, right? How did we figure that out? And hopefully this has been helpful.
Absolutely. I think that is very, very important, right? When it comes to validating, the problem you try to solve, like you mentioned, is there a need? Most businesses start from maybe experiencing a problem or feeling a pain, but you even start businesses when you don't necessarily experience it. Maybe you just like there's an opportunity, right? And I can solve this need. So thank you for sharing that. I think it's really amazing. The fact that you reached out to 400 people on LinkedIn, I think that's great. And shows how you're very detailed in trying to be sure there is a market for this. All right. So before we proceed into the part of the partnership, right, I would like to know, like, I would just like us to step back a bit, all right, and try to get to understand what your entrepreneurship background has been like. Right, because for you to make this effort of taking your time, having conversation, that shows, I mean, you've actually been on this journey of entrepreneurship. So it would be great if you can share with us what your background has been been building or starting our businesses before Flurry, or before the journey of even validating the Flurry idea?
All right, so I will say this, right? Number one, I've been involved in a number of different entrepreneurial ventures prior to Flurry. As an entrepreneur, I am primarily motivated and influenced by solving significant social problems that have a significant economic opportunity, right? Some call it social entrepreneurship, some call it conscious capitalism, but whatever it is, right, my primary focus is to be able to build scalable businesses that create significant social impact. So that's the through line that kind of cuts across my entrepreneurial journey. The first company that I had the privilege of being part of very early was a company called Heal the World. I was living and working in Morocco at that time when I met Fred, the co-founder, you know, and he really sold me on the idea of coming back home to join in building this company that really was going to set an example for what young people could achieve from there. So I came back to Ghana, joined Heal the World, where we were building really luxury leather goods out of West Africa that could be sold internationally. I left that after about a year to start a company called Kitchen Express, one of the earliest grocery delivery company. Of course, that failed. Great idea, really wrong timing, really wrong place. Following that, I started a company with a group of friends called Porter and Dale, where we're primarily focused on helping small-scale businesses and startups to scale beyond Ghana as a country. That led to some work that I did with some really amazing companies, but also motivated me to a large extent to seek impact outside of Ghana and outside of Africa. I ended up moving to the US. I moved to the US and started off as a software developer after having been to, a boot camp. Joined an early stage company called Empower Bus. Empower Bus was building social mobility software for transportation that was used by businesses to be able to shuttle their employees who lived off the bus zones to work and from work at a subsidized rate. We did that for a few years, and then the company ended up folding into or being acquired by the City Transportation Authority on that end. Prior to Flurry, I'd had the chance to co-build with my former co-founder on a company called Restart, where we were building talent management solution as a service for financial services and healthcare systems to help their customers avoid defaults and collections, right? The company, I left in 2020, the company ended up being sold about a year ago, to a collections company. So those are the things that I've been in. It's given me a varied background, both on the continent and then to be able to see things done at a different level here in the US. And so, at least from a fundamental standpoint, the way in which I approach any kind of venture or opportunity is through a much more critical lens, given the experiences with a lot of the things that cause companies to fail. So if we can eliminate a lot of that at the beginning, it helps in guaranteeing or giving a lot longer assurance of success.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's a beautiful journey I think you've had as a Also, what do you think has been like the most important lesson that you've learned from building or working in these various startups?
What I have learned from being involved in so many different ventures, right, is that there is no one way to build a startup. But there are a lot of things that you can either do right or a lot of things that you can do wrong, right? And it's important to pay attention to the things that you can do right to ensure success and to eliminate as many of the things that you can do wrong, right? To delay any kind of challenge or to minimize, right? The challenge to be able to either give up or lose out.
Wow, I mean that's profound, right? I mean, people say there are playbooks for like different industries. So essentially, what you're saying is, I mean, once you get into building mode, I mean, there's a whole lot of things that you can get right and you can get wrong. Another way I even like to put it is that it's all about execution, right? Ideas are dime a dozen. Like you can be having analyses, you know, with your founders. You know, you can even talk to some advisors, and they will be like, "No, that wouldn't work." You know, but the market will tell you if it's going to work or not. You know, the market makes the final decision. I mean, you might even hear about a product that sounds like trash. You know, and you'd be surprised to even hear the numbers they're making. All right, so thank you, Sam. For sharing that. So let's go back to Flurry, right? I mean, we've talked about like the validation process and what you were able to do to be sure that, all right, this is a market that you want to build something new that is going to impact life, you know, on the continent. But at this point, you're based in the US. So tell us, how did you navigate like the partnerships, you know, because, you know, the families are based there in Africa. What was that process like for you connecting, you know, getting trust to work with partners on ground, maybe in Ghana or Nigeria? What was that process like, you know, getting to your first customer, to your first paying customer in the US, or to the first patient, you know, being successfully treated somewhere in Ghana or Nigeria?
So, important to note that while the families are in Ghana, right, it's the financially responsible family member, the immigrant, that is coming to Flurry, right, and they're based in the diaspora, you know, as are many thousands of people, and so on our end. The partnerships are no different, if you think of it, than the way that they run in their existing phase. So a hospital in Nigeria that is serving people in Enugu does not change its behavior or change its approach or change the way in which it provides care simply because it started working with Flurry. What it does do, however, is it starts to serve more people because Flurry is connecting with this partner, right, in order to help them access other people who want their service, but they might not know about because they're not in contact or in connection with them. And so that's the way that I'll explain that. It's the person who's in the diaspora is driving a lot of that uptake or the use of the platform.
Great. So if I get you right, Sam, I'm in the diaspora, for example, I am paying for a family member back home in Enugu. For example, I'm paying Flurry to facilitate that process. You know, so is it Flurry that is going to identify the hospital, have conversations with the hospital, and maybe make the remittance to the hospital?
So yeah, we will definitely come to that and break that up. But yes, Flurry is essentially providing the kind of support that you would have provided to your loved ones if you were here, right? So that's why Flerie is a family support infrastructure or platform, right? So yes, one use case would be someone who needs a specialist, right? Flerie will help that individual, right, through their family care manager to identify the right specialist or to speak to a number of specialists prior to making a decision on them, and can help them in scheduling the appointment, in making the payment, right, which is what Flerie does. We essentially pay the provider so that you, as the person living in the diaspora, does not have to deal with money transfer or sending money back home for someone to take to that provider.
And can you share with us some stories, you know, some Flerie stories that have, you know, really impacted, you know, lives on the continent?
Yeah, so I'll give an example of, you know, one of our members, Mrs. Okusanya. She lives in New Jersey, right? Her brother-in-law, in the middle of the night, had been, rushed to the hospital because he had a ruptured appendicitis, right? Mm-hmm. He needed an immediate appendectomy, within the first 24 hours. Now, this lady had previously had her brother-in-law on an AXA Mindset insurance plan that was purchased through Flerie. The plan itself was going to cover about $900 of that, and then there was a remaining $400 or so that needed to be covered. Because she had a Flerie membership, we were able to spring into action. We were able to then pay the doctor that amount that was needed in order for that operation to be carried out as quickly as possible, giving Mrs. Okusanya time to be able to send us that money back, right, and pay back that money within a two-week period, 14 days, right, which is something that we do. We've also had, people who, came to Flerie and then had their mandatory initial medical exam, right? This lady who was pregnant in Chicago, she was very skeptical about using Flerie service. But lo and behold, when the medical group was sent to her father's house, turns out her father was really, really critically hypertensive. He had to be rushed to the hospital and then start receiving care. If her father had not been rushed, I can only guess what would have happened to him, right? And we'll probably sit and say, oh, it must be the witches back home. I spoke to him last week and everything was fine. But it's exactly that. There's so many people, so many of our loved ones who live with things that they simply don't know, and they don't check because they don't want to know so that they become responsible for it. Those are some of the things that Flerie helps you eliminate, because we know that whatever happens downstream will become your responsibility as you live in the diaspora.
And what are some of the ways people, have discovered Flerie? And you're like surprised, because of course, I'm sure the lady, from Chicago, for example, will be excited to share that story with our friends. But what are some of the ways that people have discovered Flerie that is really surprising to you?
I think what is always pleasantly surprising is when existing customers refer other people, right? It is validation in of itself. That tells us a lot about the value that they're experiencing and why they're telling other people about it. I think that's the very first and foremost. The second is when, people hear about us on LinkedIn or they see a flyer somewhere and then they come to us wanting to make sure that they've gotten set up and all of that. So that's the other, right? For the channels that we're active on and for the areas where we're pushing, I think that's always, you know, validation that all something is going right. But it is the channels that you're not necessarily investing in and you're getting people coming out of that really gets pleasantly surprising, because it means something is transcending your own activity to create results.
Absolutely. So can you share with us how you are able to like put your team together, right? And if you can now add more in terms of what was like the fundraising journey like for you? You know, have you raised? What was the process like starting out? Was it like bootstrapped? And, you know, at what point did you start seeking out investment?
So when we started earlier on, you know, there was a lot of validation to do. The first year after registering the company, there was no investment. It was basically spending from my savings to try to figure out if there was even an idea worth pursuing. So that was the first, right? So 2021, we had gotten our first customer. We had started getting customers, and we understood that, you know, if people are willing to pay for it, then we have something here, right? We ended up raising a small amount of money from a group of investors, primarily to be able to validate that value prop, and two, to validate the way in which that would be executed. And so the first thing that we focused on was basically starting from an insurance angle. Can we build an insurance plan for each of the states that we're in that allow, you know, that allow for immigrants to be able to support their families back home? And so we created an MGA. We created an insurance product that people could purchase and then support their loved ones. We created three of them. Now, after about a year of testing that, right, we came to understand that, hey, that is actually not sustainable. You're spending so much time, so much effort, and producing very little for it, right? We need to review this. So we ended up spending some time reviewing our model. We ended up making the decision that we had to pivot out of what we know, because it will not work in that way. That has been validated over time. And it was very pleasant to be able to see it happen. But at the same time, it takes a toll on you to be able to build, you know, for that long before reviewing or seeing what that data looks like. And for us, that's essentially where it came in. We used a lot of data-driven work to be able to justify some of the things that we work on. And this is a primary thing that follows who we bring on and how they themselves reinforce that culture or behavior.
All right. So in terms of investment, right, it would be great if you let us know if you've raised. Would you say your experience as a founder or as an entrepreneur that has built other business before Flurry, would you say that experience while you're pitching to investors or telling them about the story of Flurry, would you say that was instrumental to you raising quicker if you have raised now?
So yeah, we have raised capital. We've raised you know, close to $1 million pre-seed. We're currently raising a seed round with about a third of that committed already on that end. But what I will say is, while the experience, building and raising helps, it doesn't guarantee anything. And I'm very cognizant of the fact that, at least within the United States, everything that I've worked on previously does not correspond or is not at all connected to what we're building now. And so that relevance is very, very minute. If any, the relevance that folks are giving, it's not as relevant as it is what we're working on today, for instance.
So what are the most important metrics that you watch out for or you look at every day since you've been building Flurry or that has been evolving or since Flurry has been evolving? I mean, for now, what are like the most important metrics that
So
you really care about?
the most important metrics that we're looking at today is membership growth, right? So how quickly are we growing memberships, revenue, and then the percentage of our membership that's actually transacting, right? As well as the beneficiary growth. So those four I'll tell you are probably the most important. At a high level, and then there's also the cost at which we're acquiring those members.
Customer acquisition cost.
Yeah.
All right. So, and can you share with us, I mean, what do you think is your biggest challenge right now building Flurry?
It's really nailing the go to market and being able to scale that. I'll say that is the most the biggest challenge that we're solving for, and how to do that efficiently. I'm pretty sure I don't need to give you examples of companies that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars, only to burn a lot of that. And I think that's like a footnote for every single person. And we're no different from that, right? Unless we figure that out, all that's going to happen is we're just going to set our bank account on fire. And so for me, that's the number one thing that I'm optimizing for, to be able to acquire customers and acquire them at a very scalable, efficient, reasonable, cost.
Great. I think that's amazing. I was having a conversation with a friend, and we were talking about like sustainability, importance of founders, caring of understanding the importance of growing their revenue that will take you to profitability quickly, than focusing on fundraising. But of course, it depends on like the dynamics. What are you building? How long do you have to do R&D? And all that comes into shape. This is really been an exciting conversation. And is there anything new that Flurry is building that you like to share with us? I know before we started this podcast, you talked about like another segment of diaspora that Flurry is tapping into. I mean, it'd be great if you share that with the listeners.
Yeah, I'll say what we're building that maybe is new and we haven't talked about publicly is the fact that we're building a B2B to C value proposition, right? So over the last couple of years, one of the things that we've realized is that while a lot of individual immigrants are using Flurry, a great similarity that exists amongst them, or something that we've realized, is the fact that every single one of them are employed. And the challenges that they face, even though it impacts the way they show up at work and the way that they undertake their work, their productivity, there's almost no solution or benefit that actually addresses the challenges, the unique challenges that immigrant employees are facing vis-a-vis the kind of solutions that they're coming to Flurry for. And so what we're doing is working with a group of employers, right, in a pilot to be able to determine how Flurry as a value prop, right, what we call Flurry for Business, how Flurry can help these employers retain, attract, and make a difference for their multicultural employees. And that's something that we're working on pretty seriously in order to be able to grow that particular space.
Absolutely. I think that's a very beautiful product. I'm looking forward to how that is going to scale, across the world. So let's talk quickly about your technology. There's a lot of buzz around AI right now. Well, what technology or emerging technologies is Flurry leveraging on, to drive, communication maybe between your users? I think you mentioned account managers and all that. What are those technology platforms you're
Yeah, so
using?
I yeah, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, please, you can. I mean, that's all.
I'll say that we're solving for some very simple things first before we start doing any kind of buzzword. So you wouldn't hear me talk about AI at this point. You wouldn't hear me talk about machine learning. You wouldn't hear me use any fancy words like that, right? I understand and I know who my customers are. I also know who the people that my customers are trying to take care of are. Right, in a lot of cases, they are the most simple technology users. And even when they are very experienced using it, they're looking for things that do not distract them, take a lot of time, and things that are pretty a no-brainer to use, right? And so today, our technology is focused on simplicity and making things as easy as possible while offering an alternative for a large number of these customers who simply prefer not to be encumbered by the technology at all, right? And so it's a little bit of a different approach, but for who we're solving for, it's the most significant way in which we build trust and we're able to get them to engage. If the platform is simple enough and if the solution is simple enough to be able to carry that forward.
And what would you like to tell like other entrepreneurs trying to build and putting technology ahead of the problem like they're trying to solve, just to like be tuned or you know?
So I think that everybody's pathway is different. You know, I tend to be very conservative with my ideas because I don't think I figured everything out myself. And so, you know, I'm not, you know, anybody's expert to be throwing advice around. But what I will say is you cannot go wrong when you prioritize what your people need in the way that they need them. It's not about us, it's about them, right? And if you realize that what they need is less sophistication, then that's what it is that you give them, right? Because that's what they end up paying for. I think sometimes we can get caught up with what we think the solution is versus what they want the solution to be. And that's something that we could all benefit from paying attention to.
Great. That's amazing. I like that. So Sam, as we round up, is there anything you'd like to share with us?
Well, I would love for, you know, the people in the diaspora who listen to you to definitely check out www.joinflary.com. We would love for more people to know about the solution, to use the solution, and we would love to be able to get the feedback that's necessary to be able to improve on the solution. That's the most significant on that end. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sam. It's really been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for taking out the time to join us on CuriousCape Podcast.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today, and see you guys next time. Bye-bye.